Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Caper Seracote, and we're keeping it geekly with our returning guest, Felhan. We're here to break down a director's cut version of And We Love You. Get your tissues ready. The tears are about to start pouring. Fel, how have you been? Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I have been well. I am super excited to do this like deep dive into And We Love You because I put so much thought into this tiny little book and so many little details, and just getting the chance to like go over everything and tell everyone about them. I am so excited. So thank you for having me here on the platform.
And absolutely.
Yeah, my webcam isn't the best, so I look a little like a ghost right now, but I think that's fitting for what we're about to talk about. So
we have Michelle over on YouTube saying, I also love Moto Ladies. And Funny Fig saying, drawing a motorcycle may be literally impossible. How do you manage this wizardry?
So my secret is 3D models. I'm not going to lie. I did have one book beforehand where I drew the motorcycles by hand, and it was a lot of work. And I've decided that I'm going to work smart and not hard. So I use 3D models, and I use them to my advantage.
That is smart, because there's so much with the motorcycle. Outside of just the general like sleek design of it, that engine looks just so complicated to even want to try to stab at. I couldn't even imagine.
Without a 3D model, they probably would not be that detailed. But, you know, as I'm getting older, as my carpal tunnel gets worse, I'm just like, you know, if the references are there, if the resources are there, I'm just going to use them.
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone who is tuning in, we are getting ready to break down a very sad book, And We Love You. This is out in stores right now. Right here is a link to buy a copy. Make sure you pick it up today. Last time we had you on was interview 188. This is what, 383, I think? You know, you got picked up by Scout since then. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I was really excited to have this little comic in stores, and with brand new covers by like Angela Wu and Skylar Petridge. Like, I am such a big fan of their art, so it was a huge honor to have their beautiful covers.
Like, that is so awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So I think right now, let's go ahead and we'll segue right over. Let's get the party started. We'll pull up the comic and kind of just go through it beat by beat. Very excited for this. So we are looking at And We Love You. Let's give a shout out to the creative team.
Yeah, so we've got Lucas Catoni on the letters. We've got Frankie White, who's my editor. The logo is by Winston Gambro. Production, so like the person who actually made this PDF and like make sure that my printing copies look nice, is Ricky Lima. And then we have special thanks to all the friends and my girlfriend who helped me out with this book. So we've got Brent Fisher, Michelle Avenader, Sam DeFranco, and Matt Battaglia.
All right, and Michelle is the one with us in YouTube. I just did not want to butcher the last name. I don't think I've ever had a chance to kind of fill out that pronunciation, so thank you for doing that for me.
I hope I said it right. If I didn't, I am so sorry. I'm trying my best.
So this is a gorgeous cover. I mean, you know, I don't think I ever really realized it until now that this blood splatter is like, it's a body. This is a human right here. Yeah.
A couple people missed that. I actually wanted to go over that too. So there is a body in the bloodstain. Like, she is holding hands with Casey in the blood. And then when you put it like side by side with the Commander Rao cover, it's like you have Julie like just bleeding out this person. But then in the Commander Rao cover, you have like Commander Rao forming from a trail of blood. So they're kind of thematically that way.
Was that planned, or was that kind of just a happy mistake?
Both. I had different ideas for this cover, but eventually when I landed on this concept, I realized it would work like in tandem with the Commander Rao cover. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna run with this one.
So did Commander Rao come first or after?
It came first.
Okay.
They were originally two separate stories that I decided to combine together and went into one world.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Michelle saying, I love y'all. You're doing great. Happy mistake. Yes, happy mistakes are often the best mistake. We have Natasha joining us over on YouTube as well, saying hi. Welcome to the stream. So we have starting in November 20X66. So is this some far, far in the future? Like, where are we at in this timeline right now?
Yeah, so I kept it vague because honestly, I was trying not to think too much about how technology works and just wanted to dive into the story. So I was like, yeah, it's a future where they have robots, but all their photos are still in like sepia tone. So I don't know what kind of technology they have, but that's what they have.
And then right here is another gorgeous page two. We have the footprint. This is a very ominous foreshadowing right here.
Yeah, so that line is from, this is what they made you die for all those years ago. That's a line from Commander Rao and this exact shot. So there was a comic that bridged Commander Rao to And We Love You called The End of the Line, which was drawn by Jeremy Zimzer. And pretty much he drew a lot of the stuff that predated this prologue, and I just took some of the inspirations from what he drew and just referenced it again in this comic. So if you read End of the Line, you'll know that Julie dropped the photo into the footprint, and this is what we start with.
Oh, that is so good. I love how you intertwine all those stories together like that too.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a little bit of a recap. You know, what's going on in the beginning, with this foreword that we have right here?
Yeah, so pretty much you've got two factions. You've got the regime, which is the Baron's army, and you've got the resistance. It is, just take a lot of inspiration from, I guess, World War II kind of factions. And they're fighting over this place called the United Republic, which is, it's pretty much just Europe. so we have this group of soldiers whose airplane has been shot down over this forest clearing, and they've pretty much been ambushed. They're cornered by the enemy. A lot of people are dead, and there's literally just one person left in this entire plane crash scenario that kind of survived and is trying to fend for herself, and her name is Julie, and we will see what happens to her in the rest of the story.
We have Natasha saying crushing, so good. Absolutely. And if you guys have any questions at all, feel free just to drop them in chat and we'll make sure they get asked. We're going to be doing a deep dive of every single page possible that we can right here. I love this. You start off so strong and violently right in the midst of it. Let's talk a little bit of some of the designs here. Where did you draw some of the designs for the mech suits?
Yeah, so the mechs, it was actually from the comic that Jeremy Simpson did. Jeremy did all the mech designs. And then I just kind of took those mechs right from the comic, because it literally the last page of Jeremy's comic is the opening page. This is where we ended in Jeremy's comic. So I pretty much just pulled everything from that and just redrew it from a different angle. But fun fact about this page, I this is probably the eighth version I've drawn of this page, because when I first started making this comic, I wasn't actually good enough to draw it. It didn't look as good. So I redrew it 8 times before I actually landed on a version that I was somewhat happy with.
I remember you sharing some of the first pages of this from years ago, and it's remarkable just how your style has grown, and just you're a phenomenal artist. I love seeing your work, and it's remarkable how old is this story?
I drew the very first version of it in 2013.
Wow.
It was 4 pages back then and did not have mechs. all that came after.
But the Technicolor has always kind of been the running theme, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the very first version of it was in full color, and then I drew it again in 2015 where I just put the blood in color, and I liked what I did with that. So I just kind of took it here and ran with it. So everything is monochrome mm-hmm. on this page except for the red, the accent colors. So I still want the blood to pop, even when it's just, monochrome.
So why is that? Did you just want to give the scene a darker mood? Or was there some sort of special symbolism behind it?
Yeah, so I think behind, the comic was originally called The Girl with Technicolor Blood. And I think it really is a story about the life and the color fading from your eyes.
Wow.
And that's kind of where I was okay. So, all the color represents life and all the monochrome represents death, and that's just what we see this comic getting progressively less colorful as we go towards the end.
Wow, that is deep though. I love that so much. And the way we've talked about this before, your paneling with her blood is just so mind melting. I just love it. It's so next level. And it's cool that, this scene in particular, it's the color leaving because, she's fading away. That's awesome.
The one other thing other than the blood that's in color are her eyes. And, I really wanted that to be in color, because right now you see they're even when she's hurt, they're a very vibrant green. It's mm-hmm. a bright color. It stands out. And then as you go later on towards the book, she starts slowly losing the color in her eyes as, her body is there. So, yeah.
And then was there any special like references that you used for their armor, or was it just kind of something run of the mill that you chose with?
The armor I just kind of made up. I think I made Commander Rao's armor first, and then I kind of like retroactively designed these armors just to be like a less fancy version of the Commander Rao armor.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just, I don't know. I just kind of figured out what would be easy for me to draw over and over again.
And I really love this scene. Like each bullet hole exit kind of like starts its own like webbing of paneling. It's brilliant. Like this attention to detail. What inspired you to do this page? This is gorgeous.
Yeah. So this was like originally just like a tiny panel on the bottom of the page. When I first drew it, it was like a lot shorter back then. And then I was like, no, this needs to be a big moment. this is like the part where everything changes. So I expanded it into like a double page spread. And this is like my first double page spread I ever did, which is probably a little ambitious of me. But yeah, I just wanted it to be like this big, oh wow, or like big holy shit moment where you see everything go to shit.
And you see it in color too.
Yeah, and you see her life. That's her life. Even though these are like kind of sad memories, it's still like parts that are almost like less painful than what she's going through now.
Yeah, it's the defining moments of her life. It's like seeing her birth, her parents fighting because her dad's a drunk, her mom leaving. Like, oh, this was so, and from the first page of the book, it was all like a darker color. So seeing all these vibrant palettes hit you, it's just like a rush of emotions.
Yeah, and a fun fact, if you look at Julie's shirt, so it's covered by the lettering, but her shirt actually says 20 fists on it, which is a reference to my editor Frankie White's series 20 Fists, which was also like a queer like Fight Club comic that I really mm-hmm. loved. So I kind of threw that in there for him because I love 20 Fists.
That is so cool. I love that so much. That is so cool. Let me go ahead and zoom out. And anything like that, feel free. We'll zoom in on it too. So anything that you have hidden away. Then we go back to the battlefield, and right here, oh, such a brutal scene. You know, she's lying there, fading away. And then they're reporting to the Baron, and then Rent do final notice, like kind of starting off with some darker moments in her life. You know, what was the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, at the end of the day, Julie had a really awful life. She's lonely. She, had her family pretty much leave her or hate her, and she's pretty much been alone her whole life. So that's where I was trying to come from. I wanted to show that she is, a lonely young person who is kind of desperate for a better life. So, mm-hmm. like, if you look at it's a very small panel, but if you look at where she's living, like, she's sleeping on a mattress in the ground. Her place is just like trash. If you look behind the bed, it's like she has like a little microwave that just plugged into the wall beside her mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, where she makes all her meals. If you look at the side, there's like little cans, like red cans of pasta. And she's just like eating those out of a can. So it's a lot of just like...
Takeaway on the floor, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just utter filth and trash. Her life sucks. That's what I'm trying to get at.
We have Natasha 25th. That's a good one. I'm going to have to check that out. Surprisingly, that's one I don't think I've had the opportunity to read yet.
Oh, it's so good. It made me fall in love with Frankie's work. And I was like, Frankie, please help me edit this. Yeah.
So right here, we have another special introduction, too. So who's Julie meeting for the first time here?
Yeah. Are you talking about the characters in the front or?
Right here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So those characters are they're characters from my other comic, Do You Believe in an Afterlife?
Mm-hmm.
So the girl in the red is Arid, and the girl in the leather jacket is Claire. So they're just making like cameos in this book because I thought that would be cute.
I love that too. See, that's something I didn't know right away either, is like how much you intertwined your other series in such subtle ways. So is this like one big universe then, or is it just like little nods to them?
No, they are separate universes. I just thought it'd be cute to like have them in this universe. It's like mm-hmm. little cameos. A pasta sauce joke, because Rao's pasta sauce, I had to put that in there.
So was that another thing too? Was the pasta sauce something you knew about beforehand? Or like, did that have any like help in coming up with the name Commander Rao?
To be honest, I didn't know the pasta sauce existed until I came out, and everybody was like, "Look at this like $10 pasta sauce." I have tried it because I made those like dumb cooking videos with them, and you know, it's not bad. I don't know.
It's not bad.
$10 for them, but. For the branding, sure.
I got one that day. I took a picture. We made spaghetti, and I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna try it. It wasn't bad. Like you said, I don't know if I'd spend it every time, but whenever I'm feeling a little sad, maybe. We have a funny fix says, sounds like a lot of your work centers around mortality.
Yeah, so these ones do, especially in We Love You. You know, I did make this comic after my grandma passed away in 2013, so a lot of it stemmed from those feelings of like grief and losing someone. 10 years after the fact, it did kind of change somewhat, like it is more of a war story, and I wanted to put more like a broader social commentary on it. But it did start off being just like a thing I made to process my sadness.
And then right here, we start to see a little bit of that Technicolor effect. And this is such a vibrant. So this was something you came up with years ago. You know, what kind of inspired that?
So I was really back in 2013, one of the first comics I picked up was a Batwoman elegy, and J.H. Williams did like all these cool layouts that I thought were so good that like intertwined with like the story that he was telling, and I really wanted to do that with my work. So I, you know, on one hand it's like I want to make a story that made people cry so I can like, you know, process my sadness, and on the other hand I was like, I want to make a comic with cool layouts that could like, you know, intertwine visually with the story. Mm-hmm. And that was how that kind of meshed together into the story, because it, you know, it doesn't really work in anything outside of being in comics, just the way everything is laid out and told.
It's such a mind-blowing concept, though. I remember the first time I read this book, I was so blown away by it. I had to buy it physically. I was like, this is such a gorgeous book.
Thank you.
And then we have the Baron and his piece of trash men. They're getting ready to dig up the bodies, clear away the recent skirmish in such a brutal fashion, too. I love how you build up this backstory. It's so beautiful, and then you're so brutal. Like, it's like such a delicate balance of the two.
It is. On the other hand, it's like, that's kind of life. You have good moments, you have bad moments, you have like really awful, shitty moments, and it really is about the balance.
And then right here, oh, this is such a gorgeous scene too. So we have the bodies getting dragged away. And it's like the bottom half of it is just monotone, it's gray, and then the blood trailing off into color. It's just such a like abstracting feeling, like seeing like this darkness combating with the colorfulness.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite pages in the book, only because I think it works well even as just like a one-page comic by itself. And like you have the visual irony being like, you know, come join the army and you have a better life. And then
yes. The fight for a better life starts with you, and it's like, pff, well, it did.
Propaganda. But, it does come from the fact that Julie is, again, you know, she had a really shitty life. She is so desperate for anything other than what she has right now that, you know, she will listen to whatever, you know, adult that looks like they have their shit together telling her you can have a better life, and she'll be like, okay, sure, I'll try it, because I hate my life right now.
And I really love, too, like, this looks like she just got off work because she's wearing the same, maybe the same outfit from waitressing.
Yeah, that's the uniform.
And then we have Natasha, the life literally drained out of her. Incredible. Really, really. I love just like, it's like brutal. And then right here is another awesome scene. So these two, I love them. And their interaction, like, you look familiar. Oh, I was the one that threw up. Let me take you on a date. Like, you could pay me the overtime.
Yes. So, fun fact about this dialogue. So in Commander Rao, there were some, like, you know, people not sure if, like, my characters were just really good friends or if they were actually queer. So I've decided to make it very obvious in this book that, like, these are queer characters. So Casey is a flirt. She's gonna see this beautiful brunette who she threw up on a few years ago, and she's gonna ask her out. That is what, you know, queer kind of fuckboys do. But they're cute, you know.
Hey, Casey's been 12 months sober too, so that's a big improvement.
Yeah, you know, she went to those AA meetings, did wonders.
We have Michelle Romance.
Romance, exactly.
Another powerful panel right here, too. Just her full of life right here, and then her not full of life. And if we zoom in, like you said, no color in the pupils either.
Yeah. So it's, you know, her body's been there for a while, so it's starting to, she got that glaze over now.
So you know, were in a very emotional state while writing this. Like, how did it feel getting this out onto the paper for you? Like, getting it out and kind of just seeing your art and interior start to develop and unfold?
In the beginning, very stressful, because I felt like I put a lot of pressure after, like, 3 attempts drawing this in the past to, like, make sure these pages look good and they look right. And, like, I wanted to make this comic, and I don't want to, like, redraw it a fourth time. So I did feel like a lot of pressure trying to like make these pages not suck. And it took a while. Like, I think it took me maybe like 3 months to draw the first 8 pages because I was still developing the visual style for this comic. Mm-hmm. And then after I kind of got the hang of it, it got a lot easier. But it was a struggle.
Right here's another beautiful scene. We have the blood trail. And I love how you still keep her blood in technicolored, kind of like, you know, to show like this is her, and how each one has like a memory tied to it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like a little film reel, and it's just showing you a little snippets. And we have another reference to my other book, Do You Believe in an Afterlife? And Casey's literally asking that question, just throwing all the references in there.
So where can, for anyone listening, where can they find those books to purchase? Is your store, or is there a separate like website they can go to?
So right now everything can be found on my store, fellhoundart.com/store. And I recently just put up digital versions of Do You Believe in an Afterlife for sale. So you have your choice between physical or digital copies. And I also have, you know, And We Love You and Commander Rao. Everything's just up on my store.
And that should be in the description. If it's not, though, we'll get that updated immediately. So be sure to hit that link and buy this for yourself. These works are beautiful. We have J. Michael Miller in chat saying, such a good book. I agree. I'm happy you're all here with us, you know, exploring this, because it's such, this is riveting. I just, you know, when I read this, it filled me with so much emotion, but hearing the, you know, what went into it, and you know where you were emotionally, like it makes it even sadder.
I have so much to say about this book, so I'm really excited to talk about it. Like, I could talk about this book forever, probably. But you know, once again, thank you for letting me talk about this book.
Absolutely. So yeah. another gorgeous page too. We kind of see them taking on the Baron's forces, the mechs right here. I mean, and this is beautiful too. So the technology, they have like, it looks like a holographic hologram table.
Yeah, they have hologram tables. They've got giant mechs. Still don't have color cameras. But you know, they spent all their money on these like assets of war. They didn't develop it on mm-hmm. like fun stuff.
No, I love this though. So what's the Baron's plans? He looks vile, ruthless. I mean, is he just taking over the world? Like what was his plan in this book?
Yeah, so there is a huge backstory that I never got to, like, really, I guess, say. So pretty much the Baron, he is a monarch. He is from a monarch family that kind of got ousted as the world moved on into a world without monarchs. You know, we have democracies now. We've got republics. We've got, you know, governments. So he was feeling very, like, I don't know, like outdated almost, but he's also like this rich man with a lot of power and a lot of backers, and he came from like the old monarch family, and he was like, I don't like the way you're doing things, and I have all this power, so I'm literally just gonna, you know, take it back. It's he's literally just an evil man. He has no redeeming qualities. He is powerful and he is evil. He is, you know, I put he's pretty much like all the awful people in history condensed into one person.
Okay.
So there isn't a very deep backstory for him. He's just an evil man.
He's vile. You do a good job of making them even more viler. The way they handle these bodies and everything, it's ruthless. Like, I think the first time we chatted, I was like, I had such hope that somehow she would come back. Somehow she would see her like reach up or something, and then it's just like stomped away, and I'm like, oh.
You know, my mom keeps asking me if she's just frozen in a cryo chamber somewhere, so, you know, maybe my mom will convince me one day.
So let's talk the nicknames, Headcase and Woozy. What's the, you know, the meaning behind those?
Yeah, so they just kind of fun nicknames. I made up Headcase and Commander Rao because I thought it was cute, and I thought I wanted, like, you know, before she became Commander Rao, I wanted Case to be like a fun person. She's clumsy. She's kind of like a himbo. She's not the brightest, but she is, you know, caring, and she is fun. So I was like, you know, she's a bit of a headcase with a K because her name's Casey.
Mm-hmm.
And then Woozy I came out with because, you know, as you can see, Julie's like not the most athletic person. She's kind of falling behind a little bit. So she's a little, you know, she's a little tired. So you know, I was like, Julie Woozy.
Hey, she was a waitress on her feet all day. She earned, you know, keeping it cool a couple laps here and there. So
yeah.
Right here's another powerful scene too. So we just have the pile of bodies, and the one conscript right there getting ready to bury them, and then the fight right here. I loved your sequential art. You know, did you like watch like any sort of like war films or any sort of like combative scenes to kind of get inspiration?
Oh, so many. I watched like all the films. I watched like 1917. I watched, you know, Saving Private Ryan's always a good one. I watched Hacksaw Ridge, like a bunch of other ones. I can't remember all of them. Even some inspirations from Pearl Harbor. I know a lot of people hated that one, but it wasn't. I thought it was okay. But I watched a lot of World War II films. Also a lot of documentaries, just to you know, get some inspiration from like actual history.
And then does the time count backwards or forward?
So it is going forward in time. Everything
okay.
is chronological in this book.
Because I think I was reading it and I must have missaw it, but I thought for it was like tricking down, like kind of how like BC did things, you know what I mean? Where it started with a larger number and went smaller.
Yeah, so it does move forward. If you pay attention to the years, you know, this is a very short book and it takes place over like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is very like spaced out.
And then I just love this showdown right here. You get to see them in action and how they both, like Casey and Julie, kind of just handled things. Right here, you know, to the mech was broken down, but the missiles were still intact. So you get to see how resourceful they were. And I thought that was a brilliant usage of kind of just showing them overcoming, you know, issues during the battle.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So, like, you know, I really wanted, like, the scene is kind of really important because I really wanted, you know, this is the first time that Julie got like validation for doing a good job. She's never gotten a pat on the head before. She's never gotten anyone being like, you're doing great. So this is like the first time where someone did that and it like changes her whole outlook almost.
Yeah, because you see her, I think, what, this page? Or she's getting praised and she has right here, the biggest smile on her face when she's like, I'm so damn proud of you. She's like, thank you. Like,
yeah, like, I don't think she's ever smiled before this on like any of those other pages. It's like literally the first time she's like smiling in her adult life. So, yay.
And
I mean,
right here,
more stuff, but yay.
Yes. Another bittersweet too, where, you know, Julie really doesn't get a lot of mail from home, but Casey does. You know, Casey has a family that writes to her, but doesn't, like, Casey doesn't even want to read that mail. And I love to, like, how you had that moment where Julie's like, you know, why are you reading that? I would kill for that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it really shows a difference where they come from, where, like, Casey did have, like, a family that cares about her, but due to, you know, some other issues, she doesn't care for them as much. And Julie is just lonely. And even on this page, like, there's a lot of, you know, it's hard to like introduce a cast of characters when I don't have that many pages to expand on them. So there's a lot of little details. Like you see this guy being like, oh, it's my lucky comb. And his name is like Dexter Denning. And then you see like his dog tag on the pile of bodies. You see his comb on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh shit. Well, I guess I know what happened to him now.
Well, yeah, I seen right here. This was this Private Jack, you see them in the next page right here. And it's like, oh no, you died.
Yeah, there's a lot of little details there. And even in like the little comic books, like, I mean, it's pretty obvious which characters I borrowed their similarities from. One of those is my friend Kara Husset's book, Sparrow, the pink one in the middle, because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to, like, you know, reference all my friend's books in this book.
And then this is something like where a lot of friends and such that are overseas, like typically a lot of you guys have to get packages like this from people in the States, right? Because the shipping and international cost is just so expensive.
Oh, so expensive. I just have everyone smug on my Kickstarters for me.
And then I really love that introduction, how you just showed small details. You know, what was your reasoning for that, to kind of just show like the little things and then to have them die?
I mean, like, I feel like one of the things about this book, this was originally 48 pages. And then after a discussion with my editor, you know, we were talking about how there isn't, everything was just go, go, go. There was like no quiet time. There was like no like small little moments to make you fall in love with them. So I added almost like an extra like dozen or so pages into this book just to pad it out and to give them, you know, these little moments where they're just talking and you're getting to know them. And even if it's just like a single panel, like here, you know, it's even one panel and one line of dialogue is enough to show you a little bit more about their personalities mm-hmm. and all that.
And then right here, we find out that the Baron's burying bodies.
Yeah, she's trying to hide the bodies to be like, I'm not that much of a bad person.
And then the teddy bear, too. This was such a sad moment. And I love this. Unless you're looking for ghosts, I don't think there's anything there for you. Just that little, like, reassurance, like, this relationship that you developed. Like, I was so hurt that we can't see that develop.
I know. I mean, they are cute together. They would have continued being cute together if all those terrible things did not happen. But yeah, another thing about this page is, like, I really wanted to show stuff in the background that I couldn't do, like, tell in sort of, like, expositionary ways. So, like, you have that watch that stopped in the bag, and it stopped at, like, a little after 2. So we kind of have, like, a little time frame of, like, when this plane went down and when they all perished at, like, 2 a.m. at night. And then on the next page after that, we have, like, this little map that showed them where they were going. So we know, you know, approximately where they were trying to head to.
I love that so much. The attention to detail is just so remarkable in this.
Yeah, and then you have got like another little grappling hook reference, which is obviously to Commander Rao, where she literally used her grappling hooks to like take down those mechs in 2 pages.
Yeah, right now, I bet if we had grappling hooks, we could take down those mechs in no time. Like, that reference, perfect.
Yeah, it's them being cute.
And then her whistling, you know, during gunfire. And then singing right here. Like, it's perfect. This is awesome.
You know, just trying to do a lot of those cute little moments. And here we have, you know, birthdays being really sad.
You know, I really love, too, how, like, because this is something that happens all the time. You don't think about the spacing. So you don't leave enough room, and then you just wrote day underneath birth. You know what I mean? Instead of just making it fit, you mess it up on purpose. I thought that was such a perfect touch.
I mean, these are, like, I mean, they're adults, but they're also kids. They're, like, maybe, like, 20 years old. And they're not... You know, they're not the brightest, mm-hmm. but they're loving and they're fun. So they're doing their best. They're trying to throw this like little birthday party for her. They even try to make her pancakes. I don't know what the green stuff is. No one knows what the green stuff is. So, and then like in the background of this page, I tried to do things that are like relevant almost. So like mm-hmm. the pancakes are so disgusting. You just have that body in the background, literally vomiting guts, because that's how gross the pancakes are.
We like have KG Ming, love the banner, and then Michelle saying pancakes. Yes, pancakes.
Pancakes.
So one thing I noticed too, this was really interesting. Like right here, you have the grenade in red, you have the Gatling gun in red. You know, this is really striking imagery. What kind of made you do that? Like, is that just like symbolizing like explosions and the gunfire going off?
Sort of. In my head, that these were kind of like the panel equivalent of like accent walls, where they're just okay. like striking and they're there and they just add like a little bit of flavor to the page.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just like, you know, again with the little moments, it's made up of many little moments, so it's just kind of, I don't know, like it just kind of adds like more spice to the page for me.
I like it. It felt very powerful too. I just wasn't sure if there was like, I don't, like, you know, I'm still learning a lot about like the terminology for art and everything. So I wasn't sure if there was like some special thing with that or not. It was just visually striking. So I thought it added a lot of oomph to the page.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of what I was going for. I also don't have an art school background, so I don't know a lot of this. I'm just like, I think this looks cool. Let's put it in.
We have a Natasha saying pickle juice. Oh, that would be horrendous on pancakes. I would be puking out my guts too.
Yeah, I don't want to try that.
So right here we have, you're crushing my arm. Don't let go. I'm freezing. So kind of them staying alive and staying warm during combat. I love the relationship that started developing during this.
This is cuddling. It's very important to have the cuddles.
Mm-hmm. And they have flanked us, everyone out of the alleyway. And then, of course, losing, friend and comrades.
I tried to, find a balance between, what is too morbid to show. This is a book about death, but I also didn't want to make it, ultra-violent in a way Kamen Rao was. It is also a book that, tries to respect the horrors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to put it, but it's I didn't want to be overly graphic if I didn't have to be, and only use what was necessary to create the right level of horror that I wanted for this book.
And that seems like it's a hard balance to maintain.
Yeah, so some of the violence is in those silhouettes, again, because I didn't want everything to just be everyone's getting their guts blown out. That, yes, that happened, but also, we don't have to see it all the time.
No, I love this. And I love, too, like you said, you keep that relevancy with the background, the blood splatters, the bodies, kind of just subtly in the background, there without kind of just being in your face about it.
Yeah, I think, it's about the stories left untold. So a lot of those things in the background are other people's stories that are left untold. Even
wow.
In the story, we don't really tell them, and we're just left to think about what could have been.
I just love it. Continues blossom. Are you okay? Just don't let go. I love that. That's such a powerful moment right there.
Oh, they're so cute.
And then them, the revenge for their friend, their fallen comrade right here.
Yeah. And then you kind of see, it's just everything just leads back to death. So either one faction is dying or the other faction is dying. It's just eventually they'll have to come to terms with the horrors of what they're doing themselves, because it's all just, there's no winners in war. Everyone's just dying.
Wow, no art school. I mean, your interiors are so gorgeous, and the different techniques you utilize is just odd. So is all of this self-taught?
Pretty much. I mean, I read books about how to draw. I looked up YouTube tutorials, but the paneling, a lot of it, again, is just because I adore J.H. Williams, and I was just like, I wish I could make something that looked just as striking visually. So I was like,
mission accomplished.
Into this. So.
Yeah, mission accomplished. This is gorgeous. This scene, another, you have them two right here, the two birds in the sky, them two together, and then the decaying, eyes rolling in the back of the head.
Poof. Yeah. There was a line here originally where Casey would say, don't stare too long, the ghosts would get angry, as a reference to the other ghost line when they were looking at the pile of dead bodies. But I thought the silence worked better, so I took it out.
I think it does too. It makes it that it just, they're so struck by what they're seeing right now.
Yeah, the compliments are kind of unsettling.
I really love too, each character, your expression on their faces. You do such a good job of just the horror, the look of horror, just stuck on their face. It's perfect.
Shock. Yes, there's a lot of those. Just the little PTSD faces.
So let's talk. When you were doing this, did you listen to any sort of music to kind of get you in the mood to do this? This book seems like it's pretty dark. I would be curious to see what you listened to during it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I listened to a lot of stuff. I listened to a lot of Linkin Park. I listened to, what's the guy's name? Self Jen Stevens, 4th of July. It's a really sad song. I listened to a lot of... I had a whole Spotify playlist where I just can't remember what's on it. I think Runaway Train, the really old song from the 90s. I had someone from Billie Eilish that's really sad.
We're gonna have to start a trend, release the Spotify playlist. We need to get in our feels about this.
I'm so bad with names. I'm just like, oh, it's playing. I like it. Let's vibe with it.
And there's something about being sad and listening to sad music that makes you sadder, but you need to. It's like, let's intensify the sadness.
Yeah, you gotta like get into the mood. Like, I always play music, so every time I draw, it's very important.
And then right here, we have that scene where, you know, she admits that she's, you know, she read that letters and she just couldn't understand, you know, why Casey isn't responding back. You know, you got people who love you.
Yeah. And that's like the big hole in like Julie's life. You know, she never had anyone who cared about her. And she just can't fathom like having that kind of safety net and just abandoning it. And so she's like, she really is a head case. She's a dummy. Like, why are you just running away from the people who care about you? And also, like, you know, Julie can't fathom to say that to Casey when she's actually awake, because she herself isn't really good. She's not like a good communicator of her own feelings. So she's kind of like talking to herself and just crying in her own mind.
I love that too. You know, you have her sleeping in her lap covered up with a blanket and everything, and Julie's like kind of like being her protector in this moment.
Yeah, and like I wanted all the stuff in the background to, you know, signify like a bonding moment. So you've got the ring, you've got the photo of them together, and it's just like last little quiet moment they really had together.
And I love the blood on the photo too, the subtle touches.
Yeah, it's a lot of little tiny things in the background that just never got told. Yeah, so with this page, I think this is one of the saddest pages in the whole book, because if you look at the letter in the background, it's literally addressed to Casey, and it says, "That night, I was so afraid to tell you how I truly," and then it just ends. So in my head, I put that in there because, as I was saying, Julie is such an awful communicator that she just like writes little like notes about how she's feeling to herself. Like, she needs to write like drafts of how she's feeling before she's able to talk about them. So she wrote a draft of all the things she wanted to say to Casey, and then never said it. And she kept it in like her pocket, and now it just all like dies with her because she never got a chance to say anything.
And that pain, like when she left the hospital room and you see her shut the door and like you could see it in her face when she like goes to punch the door, like, oh my God.
Yeah, like there is so much she wants to say, but she just don't know how to say it because she's like such a stilted like communicator, and she doesn't know how to process these feelings of like having to care for someone or having someone care about her. So it's sad. It's about all the things she was not able to say or do and all the regret that comes with.
And this leads to another powerful page too. You know, we see Casey gets shot.
Yeah, and this is like a little kind of redraw moment from another page in Commander Rao. It is a little different because I was thinking like this would be from Julie's perspective, and the version of it in Commander Rao would be from Casey's perspective. So they're similar, but not exactly the same version of those events. I would think that after 10 years, her memory is probably a little fuzzy.
And I love like using the accent boxes again too, like the blood splatter here and then them like grabbing each other's hands.
Yeah, it's little moments, all the little moments that kind of blend together.
So for these backgrounds, there's so much detail in them. Like, how did you end up designing them? Was there just like a whole bunch of layering or like imagery that you drew and kind of layered together? Like, what went into that process?
Yeah, so I drew all the stuff in the boxes first, and then I just kind of winged it with like stuff I thought would be relevant to like the pages, or like stuff that I wanted to say that could be implied but not actually said. So like, you know, their uniforms had all these like the number 10 on them, so I was just like, well, I guess they're from the 10th platoon, and then I put a little patch there, so now you know where the 10 comes from. It's not like explicitly said until later in the book, I think, but it's implied that the 10 stands for 10th platoon. And yeah, just little stuff like that.
And we were talking backstage, but when I realized who your letterer was, it was this moment directly right here. Because there was another scene in particular where, you know, the person was either fading out of consciousness or something, but they started fading the lettering like this. And it's such an awesome touch, and I love it. I don't think I really ever have seen this before anywhere else.
Yeah, it's so good. I love that. I love that Lucas did that too. It just works so well for what's happening. Like, this person is just, you know, about to lose consciousness, and the words are trailing off, and it's just, you know, all those little lettering touches that Lucas did were just phenomenal.
And then, like, right here, you're not leaving me. You know, I have your bag. You have mine. I have yours. And then, like, ultimately, she dies alone. She dies with her back, you know, against, you know, a broken airship part or a mech part. And she's, yeah, like, they're alone. It's such a... It's... Wow!
Yeah. So, it's all that irony. Like, if we want to go to the next stage, because that's literally... so this double spread, it's literally like a foil to, you know, page 4 when she got her, you know, when she died. And, you know, the enemy was saying no one escapes. But here it's showing that someone did escape, and it's because she saved them. And, like, the only person who did escape was because, you know, she saved her. But Julie herself could not escape. So that's kind of like the foil that I wanted between this page and the one at the beginning.
Oh my god. That's like such a gorgeous, like, reasoning behind it. I just love, like, just there's so much going on right here, and it's so beautiful. Like, so many of these pages could be just standalones in themselves, it feels like.
Yeah. Like, whenever I design a page, I always want it to make it look good by itself, almost like in an illustrative way. And then if it works well as a story, that's also great. But so, I really want each page to have its own.
Why make them the 10th platoon? Was there any special reasoning behind that, or did it just fit good?
So a long time ago, when I was drawing kind of like stuff that eventually inspired this, I was designing a lot of like armors, and as just like a decal design, I just put like a little 10 on it. Because, like, even when you look at Gundams, they have a lot of just random numbers on them.
I love it so much.
Yeah, I'll put a random number here. And then I was like, why did I put this random number here? I don't know why. So I literally went back and was like, okay, I guess they're from the 10th platoon. That's why the number is there.
You know, I love Gundam kits that have, like, a bunch of decals, like, the cool look. I just hate putting them on. It's like, whenever I see a sticker sheet and there's 100 on there, I'm like, oh, my God, no.
It is a chore, but they look so good. So
yes, they do.
Like, I take the hours to put them on.
And except when you get it off just a little, and then you have to, like, get in there, and you're like, I hope I don't bend the sticker or crinkle it, like.
Yeah. Oh, my. It's like you get one try. I've switched to the water decals because they're a little more forgiving, because you can still slide them around. But... still very, very kind of mundane to put on.
So this was another powerful page. I mean, what's going on here? Like, my interpretation is kind of like her just falling metaphorically to her death.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they were digging this giant hole, and now they're putting bodies into this giant hole. And as she's falling, she's got her hand, like, she's reaching out, and no one's really there to help her now.
And then, right here, too.
Like, later on in the story, you know, we've got her being asked about, like, holding hands when you die, and here you see she's reaching out for a hand, and there's no one.
Oh my god, I love it. I love it. And then the blood puddles, so gorgeous, of her, you know, there with Casey while, you know, she's getting mended up by the doctors. Like, this is such a gorgeous scene.
And she is holding her hand. It's the hand holding.
And Casey's sleeping, so she doesn't realize it, does she?
Yeah. All the things that Casey does never know, because Julie doesn't know how to say those things when she's actually awake.
We have our good friend Ian Mondrick over on YouTube stopping in, throwing some hearts in chat, and then Natasha, my heart torn apart. Natasha, you better hold that heart together, because it's going to get ripped apart even more.
well, thank you for the kind words of sadness, Natasha. Ian.
So... Was it difficult with Casey's sleeve to draw that with the panels? I love the roses, but I always got to ask whenever I see a character have tattoos.
Yeah, so I drew it, and then I photoshopped it on afterward into, like, every single panel. I found that with characters with a lot of, like, little details, like earrings and stuff like that, I tend to forget. So I literally, like, draw the pages, and then I'll go back and, like, put the tattoo and put the earrings on it every single page after, because I always forget.
And then I love this moment right here. This is like right there. We'll get to this page too, but the kiss and the little heart popping up, that's so cute. But, like, right here, just their interaction, and then we find out that Casey's getting sent back home tomorrow.
Yeah, she's gonna be sent back home, but it's fine, because, like, even now Julie's like, haha, you can find another girl. And he's like, no, you're the only one for me. And just, like, very, like, almost like casual speak, so then they don't have to, like, cry their eyes out, but you know that they really like each other. And when you look at the comic books that Julie left behind for Casey, you have Commander America, you have Major Missile, and you have Bat Crusader. And if you look at Commander Rao's, like, actual, like, costume, she has, like, the colors of Commander America. She's got, like, the rocket boots of, like, Major Missile, and she has the grappling hooks of Bat Crusader. But it's literally, like, you know, she's taking all these influences that Julie left behind for her, the things that Julie loved, and just putting them, you know, into this, like, Commander Rao persona.
Oh, my God. We have Mama Geekly joining us. I love the tattoos. Awesome drawings. I will enjoy reading this. Such a good story. Let me know. I will mail you. I have the book right here. Let me know. I will mail it to you, Mama, and you can get a chance to cry your eyes out to this as well.
Enjoy some sadness.
And then this scene. I love this so much. Like, you finally kind of see, you know, she's like, it's now or never. And then we get the kiss. And then Casey right here with the heart, like, swooning. Oh, my God. I love it.
She's got a little crush.
We have Natasha. We have Natasha saying, I didn't know about the outfit stuff. Yeah, that's cool how you combined influences from those three comics to create that.
Yeah, I mean, in my head, you know, a lot of things are left unsaid. But, like, in my head, Commander Rao is, like, what if is, like, Casey pretending to be, like, what if, like, you know, she could make, like, the superhero based on, you know, this person that she really loved, because the person she really loved superheroes. And she's just like, you know, I'm just going to become something larger than myself. I'm going to become something that would, you know, make you a hero in the minds of everybody else. And so it's kind of like Casey almost like pretending to be this like heroic superhero character in honor of Julie. But as we see here, that's not who she really is. She's a fun, young, dumb person who kind of got swept up in all of this and then went a little insane after Julie died.
And then we see right here they have a date reservation December 4th, 6 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, so Julie was supposed to, you know, her tour was supposed to end by then. She was supposed to come home and they're supposed to have a little date together.
Then this scene is so powerful. You see Julie, you know, she leaves and then she finally like loses her composure. You know, she was staying strong, but then she can't stay strong for long.
No, it's like she wants to go back and she wants to like actually talk to Casey and tell her all those things she wrote in that tiny little note that she always says to herself, and she just never did. And so she's crying.
Yeah. And the emotion on her face, like I said, you do such a good job of just portraying this emotion.
Yeah, it's you know, definitely a scene that I kind of dragged out. It's just her walking out, but I want to show all the little emotional phases she goes through, because it's, you know, you got to see it. It's a slow moment.
Yeah, yeah. And then this too. Oh my God, the pinky promise.
Yeah, it's sad because it, you know, obviously fell apart. Sadly.
And then the panel right here. She's leaving with tears, and then you start giving it that the blood splatter on the corners.
Yeah, it's like, you know, so all the other panels that have like a little blood border effect, I took it out for these ones because this was a really special moment between them. I didn't want to be distracted by anything else in the background, but you see, you know, it comes back. The horrors of death and war come back as she's leaving, and the moment is gone.
And then, yeah, as soon as she is leaving away, then it covers even more blood as well. Wow. And then we see this song. Is this a song that Casey was singing when they were that one moment?
Yeah, yeah. It's a
song.
Oh
my God.
Then she was like, you know, trying to like calm me down. So she sings this song, and it's like, you know, it's an endearing song about going through the tribulations of the world with together.
Is it an actual song?
No, I made it up. Originally, I had a real song in there, but my editor was like, you should just make one up so you don't get hit with copyright.
That's true.
I was like, okay, I'll make it up.
It hit me even so much harder when I put two and two together. Like, this is a continuation of that song. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's their song.
And I love how, like, in between the panels, you continue the singing, you know? We brazen on, like, into war.
And, you know, they go into the storm and right, literally right on the next page. And we all saw how that turned out.
Oh, my goodness. This is so graphic, too. Like, I'm still mind blown that you had no art school experience. Like, the fact that you were able to kind of just do this. And even though you had to do it a couple of times, like, the result is just so gorgeous.
Thank you. I spent a lot of time those 10 years thinking how I could like maximize the pain in 64 pages. So I was like, page compositions like this was like, this will really hurt. I'm going to do it.
And like right here too, the subtle detail, like you have just the outline of her pupil right here, and then it's gone right there. Like
it's like her eyes get progressively less. They're just gone, as you said. And if we see that, the bottom panel on the left side, that panel was actually originally in The End of the Line, like the bridging comic with Jeremy Zipser. Mm-hmm. And I really like this panel composition there, so I thought I'd just like do another homage to it, but this time it's with Julie running down instead of like the other soldiers who ran through the exact same passage. So yeah, that was a little homage to that comic once again.
We have a Michelle saying pain. Yeah, I know. Fellow like made this book and it's like the world shall know pain. And I love like the perspective view on this as well. Your perspective views in this book were just next level, it felt.
Yeah, like, I mean, for that one panel, it was Jeremy's composition. And I just kind of borrowed it because I wanted like to reference it because it was a really cool shot. So I can't take credit for that one, but
I mean, you still had to draw the pencil and color it, right?
Fair.
Very gorgeous though. And then right here too, so we see they're starting to get buried, and like I love how the panels are getting buried with each like shovel. It's such a gorgeous attention to detail right here. Like this is awesome.
This is my second favorite page in the whole book because it's the one that actually came out the way I had it in my head. Like this is always like a very, like, I had this page even in like the versions from 10 years ago, and it was a very important page because it would have been like the last page. But here I just, you know, we have like Julie's like last cry of desperation. She's like reaching out, there's no one there, and I think it was very important to me that like as she's screaming and getting buried, like her armor goes away and what we see isn't a soldier, it's just a girl, it's just Julie. She's in regular clothes, and she's just some kid who got swept up in the wars of, you know, adults who are egomaniacs.
Very powerful. We have Natasha saying, so gosh darn clever. That's remarkable. And then another powerful image right here.
Yeah, Julie did nothing wrong. She was just, you know, a young kid who got, like a vulnerable youth who got used by bad people.
And then I love this too, just a page of total darkness.
Yeah, there's a lot of empty double page spreads because now it's just, you know, there's no more color. It's gone. Life is gone. It's empty. Everything is empty. You know, you feel empty inside. And that's kind of what I was trying to do with these spreads.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to like go get my kid a hug after this interview or something. I'm feeling sad.
All the painful secrets.
And I love this too. You kind of see them. The job's done. They're walking away. They're getting ready to load up. And this star, these stars are gorgeous too. I just love like how beautiful like the sky looks. Like even though it was like what just happened was brutal and dark, it's like it's such a beautiful night.
Yeah, you know, it is like the irony of it. Like, you know, underneath that page, I mean, is like, you know, dozens and dozens of dead bodies. The stars
are really. And you have the birds scavenging the battlefield as well.
Yeah, and this conversation is really important because it really is, I think, the one that ties everything together. It's the conversation that's like referenced in the beginning of Commander Rao when she's talking about dying alone. And fun fact, this was actually like based off a real conversation I had with a friend one night. So I asked her if I could like borrow elements of our conversation for this book, and she gave me permission. But yeah, it was just like a really, you know, sort of heart-to-heart chat that's based off like a real chat. And yeah, it's about dying alone.
I love this. I don't know if I'm all mangled and shit. I'm not sure I'd want people to see me like that. And Julie, of course, is all mangled and shit at this point.
Yeah, it's like it's hard. Julie is always the kind of person who thinks that she deserves to be alone, and that, you know, she doesn't really deserve to have someone there for her because all she's known in life is like being abandoned by everyone. So she's just like, you know, I don't want to, you know, remember what it's like to be alone.
You know, and maybe this is my own personal interpretation, but like with Julie's hard life and everything, you know, what are you going to do when your life flashes before you? You know, not if there's nothing worth remembering. And she remembered a lot, even though she felt like she had a bad, rough life. There were still things that she still remembered and, you know, still held dearly.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like, you know, the things that Julie says aren't the things she actually means. She doesn't know how to say a lot of things she means. So she's like, yeah, you know, I'd rather die alone because all this. And at the very end, you see that she did not want to die alone, screaming to Casey, who had her hand reaching out for her. And that's, you know, kind of, you know, the sadness of it. It's the irony.
Thank you for this opportunity. Man, I knew this comic was deep, but like there's so many different levels to it that just was so mind-blowing once we got into it.
Yeah, I've just a lot of thought went into this over 10 years.
And this moment too, like she's laying there and then you have her dog tags covered in blood.
Yeah, and like again, she gets cut off. We don't know what she wants to say, and she's just cut off by this mech, which is... You know, it's Julie's whole thing where she like wants to say something and she can't, and we will never know.
And then, so what was, you know, this mech stomping down, leaving this footprint? Why did you end up adding this?
I honestly just wanted like this moment to see her. I mean, it's going to sound really morbid, but I wanted like a moment to see her like get her life like snuffed out and like all her memories are gone. Like, this is the end. And what happens at the end is that she never got to say all those things. She never got to, like, make sense of her own life. She never got that resolution. It literally just gets cut off. So that's why I kind of put that stomp in there. It's like, her life isn't complete. That's why it's so sad.
And death leaves a heartache no one can heal. That. When I read that part, I was like, damn, dude. Damn.
I love that quote. Like, it's like kind of iffy where it's from. Like, some people say it is from like some Irish tombstone. I tried to find it, but I'm not like 100% sure that's where it comes from, but that was my best source. But it's a really nice quote.
And then this part too, you see her with the crutches because she's still healing up.
Yeah.
God.
The little flowers, flapjacks, fritters, and fun.
And love leaves a memory that no one can steal, so.
The end.
So, and we love you. Where'd you end up coming, you know, up with the title from?
Yeah, so it actually came from a poem I wrote for a completely different comic, like that one right there. I wrote that in 2015, I think, for something else completely. And the original title of this comic was The Girl with Technicolor Blood. But that title was very long and very confusing. So I was like, I need to shorten it. So I was thinking of new stuff. And then I found this poem again, and I was like, I mean, this poem works for this comic too, so I will just borrow it. And then if you look at the quote, it's like, death leaves a heartache no one can heal, love leaves a memory no one can steal, and we love you. So like, you know, you still live on in our memories because you were loved even though you didn't know it.
Wow. Holy crap. Holy crap. So everyone watching, let me drop that link in chat real quick. You can buy this book right now. Right here is the link to Scout. We'll have a Fellhound's store in the description, so you guys can check that out and you can get all of their previous works as well. We have Captain B-Dub over on Twitch subscribing for 56 months in a row. Thank you so much for that. And then Panda saying, looks great. Yeah, this book is heart-wrenching. Oh my God, I loved it so much. And Fell, thank you so much for swinging by and breaking down every page, you know, cover to cover. With that being said, we were talking, you know, backstage a little bit in the beginning of the stream as well. So you got some things coming out in 2023. Everyone, be sure to give Fell a follow on Twitter to stay up to date with that. You mentioned an anthology. Can we talk maybe about that, or is that still spoiler territory?
I think it's hush hush right now.
Okay, all right.
So I can say I'm in them. Very excited to be working with the collaborator that I'm working with. yeah, very excited.
There's
other personal projects that I'm working on, trying to do some pitches. I am slowly moving towards like happier endings. So if you are completely like gut wrenched by this comic, know that that won't be the feeling forever.
And then we have a love story with two ladies on a motorcycle potentially in the future too.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on right now. That's what I'm really trying to hope, or at least like hoping that's going to be my next big project. I've grown really attached to these characters, drawing them just randomly as I'm like practicing new styles and all that. So yeah, fingers crossed. They will not die. I can guarantee you that. They'll be alive, 100% alive and queer.
and in love, hopefully, right?
Yeah,
okay.
They're very okay. cute.
And hopefully with stomachs full of pancakes. With that being said, guys, it is time for us to wrap up. Fel, thank you so much for swinging by. Everyone watching, right there is the link to buy this comic. If you're unable to buy it, simply put it on Facebook and Twitter. Word of mouth is 100% free. And you can make a friend or family member super sad just by giving them that link. Make them happy. Make them cry. I hope you all have a fantastic day. Most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.